The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Former U.S. President Donald Trump has landed in Milwaukee for the Republican National Convention following that failed assassination attempt on him in Pennsylvania. Trump is sticking to his schedule despite the shooting, which left one bystander dead, two wounded, and the former president himself shot in the ear. The assassination attempt has left the nation shocked, and political tensions in the U.S. have risen to even greater heights. I'm joined now to discuss it all by Larry Donnelly, columnist and law lecturer at the University of Galway, and in studio by Lorcan Nyhan, head of training at the Communications Clinic and U.S. columnist for the Sunday Independent. Good morning and welcome to you both. Larry, first of all, when I saw this unfolding late on Saturday night, I'd just gone to bed and I was roused by the family to say, you've got to see this. There was, I think, shock, but not too much surprise that something like this could unfold.
Yeah, I think, Pat, we were all shocked at one level, but surprise, perhaps not. You know, the reality is the ratcheting up of political tension, as you say, has been manifest for a long time now. And I'm afraid this incident happened at the intersection of a few different things. That is, a sick gun culture where individuals, as you say, a young, very young man can get his hands on an AR rifle that can fire off shots very, very quickly. A society that's extremely divided and very angry, and an economic model that is broken. I think this incident, while we'll be talking about it, and I know law enforcement authorities are trying to get to the bottom of it, it happened at the intersection of all three of these. And what saddens me most deeply is it's just the latest manifestation that America, the country of my birth, the country I love dearly, is in a very, very bad place right now. And that saddens me and it frightens me. But I think that's the context from which this attempted assassination emerges.
I was looking at Meet the Press yesterday, and the Speaker of the House was on, and he talked about lowering the temperature with rhetoric and so on, and then immediately launched into an accusatory bile about the about the Democrats. So I'm not sure this is going to change very much.
I'm not sure it will. I mean, look, you know, and President Biden was on last night speaking to the nation, effectively saying that, look, we have some very, very significant differences and things can get heated, but we settle our disputes at the ballot box, not not with guns and certainly not by killing or attempting to kill people. But what I think is notable, at least at the party level in elected officials, is that, Pat, there aren't many moderate politicians left anymore. We used to have people who could get together, who could compromise, who weren't necessarily Republicans and Democrats first, who were Americans first. And I don't think we have that anymore. And to some extent, that's not reflective of the American people. The American people, if you look at the opinion polling, still are somewhere in the murky middle. That is, the majority of them are. Mm. But we have elected officials who represent the polls. And that's why public discourse is so poisoned.
Now, the man who was involved in all of this, they keep on saying the alleged assassination attempt and the alleged perpetrator, but I mean, I don't think there's any doubt that it's Thomas Matthew Crooks, a registered Republican. What does that actually mean, in fact? Can't anyone just put their name down?
Yeah, I mean, anyone, you know, on their 18th birthday can go into their local city or town clerk and, you know, pick up a paper and sign it and say, would you like to be a Democrat, Republican, Libertarian, or Independent? Other states have different designations. I'm not sure I would read a huge amount into that. And this is sort of a mysterious figure, because while he registered Republican, he also gave a small donation to a progressive cause as well, I think shortly around the time of the January 6th incident. This guy, Crooks, seems to have been something of a loner. We're hearing that he was ostracized. He was bullied in high school, that he didn't speak too much to people, didn't seem to have very many friends or close acquaintances. We know his father has said he wants to know what the hell is going on. It appears that the gun that he used was legally obtained and that it belonged to his father. Whether he had his permission for it or not, we don't know. We also are hearing that he had some explosives in the car with him. And lastly, We know that this guy was seen pacing around the place, acting strangely, and that he was seen on top of a building. And how this all happened is a huge issue. And there are serious questions to answer, both, I think, by local law enforcement and by the Secret Service.
Some of the texts coming in about social media and how it has fueled the vitriol in American politics. This one: the social media algorithms feed users more of the same and more incrementally more extreme. Public media is supposed to offer both sides of the story and arguments on both sides. It should be a legal requirement that algorithms, which are automated, of course, present the opposite view 50% of the time, so as at least to offer a broader perspective to people. That's one. Another one says, he was shot. American gun culture, join the dots. That's from Nolene.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the gun culture is something you and I have spoken about many, many times, Pat. And one of the things being mooted is, might this soften, former President Trump's cough, so to speak, on the gun issue? My suspicion is absolutely not, that it won't have any impact. I'm afraid the strength of the gun culture is impenetrable in American politics. But as for social media, there's no question at this point in time that it has had a grossly disproportionate and really sad and tragic in many ways impact on the polity, not just in the United States, but across the world.
Now, there are some terrible ironies, I suppose, for Donald Trump, not that he will necessarily see them. But what happened on January the 6th, which was the encouragement of violence on Capitol Hill, the laughing, the mocking of Nancy Pelosi's husband when he was attacked by a hammer, by an assailant, and Don Jr. posted something on Twitter showing his Halloween costume, which included a hammer. I mean, you know, the irony should not be lost, but possibly will be lost on Donald Trump, that the invective and the encouragement of violence, which he represents, has now come back to haunt him and could have taken his life on Saturday night.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think there's any way that Donald Trump can say, I'm above this, or this somehow, you know, is somebody else's fault. Donald Trump is up to his neck in this. He has helped to create and indeed has thrived on this culture of, you know, debased discourse, almost incitements to violence and all of that. There's no doubt that he is a big part in that. That having been said, we've seen real pushback from Trump and his allies to the effect that, Democrats have made all sorts of comments that, this is going to be an autocracy. This is a clear and present danger to American democracy. So they're arguing that the Democrats are just as guilty. And the fact is, I think the rhetoric on both sides has been deeply, deeply unfortunate. The question now, Pat, to be ruthlessly political about it, is what impact is this going to have on the race?
All right. Now, Lorcan has been listening to us having this conversation. What do you think will be the impact, Lorcan?
It's going to be significant, and I think it's going to impact it in a certain number of ways. The first one is that the enthusiasm, the motivation, the turnout of Trump's base is now absolutely guaranteed. It wasn't a huge question, but now that's absolutely guaranteed. This is a turnout election. It's a mobilization election. The 74, 75 million votes that Trump needs to get, he will now get. So that's number one. The second impact is, I think the Democrats will now lose their nerve and they will keep Joe Biden as their candidate. The auction has been taken out of that issue. The airways are obviously dominated by this, and therefore Joe Biden is going to be the candidate. Joe Biden is going to obviously struggle to beat Donald Trump. One of Joe Biden's big election talking points was the threat to democracy. He now needs to talk about cooling it down, turning it down. He's not going to be able to use that. He was already weak. He has now got weaker. So they're going to keep Joe Biden. Trump's base is going to turn out. How do you energize the Democratic base without the anti-Trump vote? I don't know how you do it with Joe Biden as your candidate.
The prospect of removing Joe Biden at the moment, it seems unconscionable. You simply couldn't do it in this political maelstrom.
I don't think they will do it. I still think they should do it. I don't think they will. I think that there is a possibility that senior Democratic leaders could go to Joe Biden and say, right, Joe, we can use this as the opportunity for you to move past. Take the Lyndon Johnson excuse. When Lyndon Johnson stepped down, he said, look, I'm not stepping down because of the election. It's because I really want to bring the nation together. I really want to fix Vietnam, and I can't do that as president. Try to convince Joe Biden to say, this is the moment that I should step by and unify, but they won't do it.
I read recently, though, that Lyndon Johnson's real reason for stepping down was his health. His father or mother or both, perhaps, had died young of heart disease. He had heart attacks and he just wanted to take it easy.
The brilliant biographies of Lyndon Johnson by Robert Caro consistently make this point. Lyndon Johnson was convinced from an early age that he was going to die young, and that's where his driving energy came from. And he was convinced that he would die of a heart attack in his second term. And he died actually just after the first term of his successor. So his timeline actually wasn't too far off. So that was definitely playing on him.
The suggestion that we could see a joint statement from the candidates, the incumbent president and the former president together. I mean, that is the last comparison that Joe Biden would want to present to the public. A doddery, dithering 81-year-old versus this invigorated, bleeding with obviously a bandage on his ear to make the point.
There was a piece in The Atlantic, Pat, talking to Trump's campaign managers recently, and they were very, very open about what they want to make this race about, which is strength versus weakness, which is the image of a strong Trump versus a weak Joe Biden. And that is going to be the defining image up to now. So they won't do that. What I think Trump actually might do is in the Republican convention be a slightly more conciliatory, unifying figure for that period of time. He'll do it out of political expediency, but I think he might do it because I think we've seen the last couple of weeks that Donald Trump, he's always had the art of entertainment nailed, not quite the art of politics. He's getting the art of politics. After the debate, he went absolutely silent. He's learning that, and that's a bit more
worrying. He will be tethered to an auto queue, one presumes, in Milwaukee.
Absolutely. And I think he now will realise himself his base is locked in. He doesn't need to energise his base. He doesn't need to feed them the fuel they need. So he can actually now kind of risk free go for that slightly more middle ground approach that will play very, very well for him. The Democrats need to find an issue that's going to energise their base, that's going to convince people to get up and vote. Last time that was, we don't like Trump, anti-Trump, threat to democracy. They're trying that again this time. I think that is now a weaker argument. I don't think it should be a weaker argument, but it is. What are they going to find instead? Joe Biden isn't the man to do it.
A weaker argument, a week is a long time in politics. I mean, it's amazing how quickly this whole thing will pass. There will be investigations and so on into the Secret Service and their role in all of this and how they may have been in dereliction of their duty to protect the candidate. But in a week's time, 2 weeks' time, you know, maybe, and Biden will not be able to escape the spotlight for that couple of weeks. He may make more gaffes.
Well, he will make more gaffes because it's in Joe Biden's makeup to make more gaffes. And he's making more and more of them. So that's absolutely guaranteed he will. And then that story will come back up again. And if the gaffe is now later than the Democratic convention or closer to it, they'll have lost their moment.
I was away, obviously, but following everything, and the idea of referring to his own Vice President Kamala Harris as Trump and calling Vladimir Zelensky President Putin. I mean, those kind of things are, in my view, politically firing offences.
Yeah, I think they probably are as well. And in the backdrop to the debate was slightly different in that many times he was meandering, he couldn't finish the sentence. That was much, much worse than the kind of, these were misspeaks. You know, he didn't actually think he was, you know, making those mistakes. They were misspeaks. But in that context, they are damaging. They're very, very damaging. He should be walking away just electorally. But also, I think what's going to happen with the Democrats now is they're going to panic a bit in the background of this. They're going to say, right, the presidential election is lost. Let's throw all our money and resources into the House and the Senate race. I think they're going to surrender that race and just kind of go into a defensive crouch and try to have, you know, Senate or House majorities to control Trump. I think that's a disastrous strategy because it won't work. If you give up on the head of the ticket, everything's going to fall underneath that.
Larry, what is your take on the impact on the presidential race?
I think the impact is significant. I think that we've heard some commentators almost say that the American people will get past this or move on from this. This hasn't happened in more than 40 years. An attempt at an assassination like this, the president of the United States, former president of the United States, Republican nominee, was shot. This is going to be seared into the public consciousness. And what's more, any temptation to forget about it, I think, will be undone by Donald Trump, who is not going to let anyone forget about it. In terms of the race, I agree with very much of what Lorcan has said. I'd add to it that I think that, you know, with all the usual caveats, there's a long time left to go. Joe Biden's mountain to climb has just gotten considerably taller. First of all, before the shooting took place, the aggregate polling had Donald Trump ahead by 5 percentage points in Pennsylvania. I suspect that margin will grow a little bit. And if Joe Biden doesn't win Pennsylvania, this race is effectively over. He cannot win the Electoral College, in my view, unless he wins the state of Pennsylvania. We had a Democratic congressman tell Axios yesterday that now, in the wake of the shooting, he and House Democrats are reconciled to a second Trump presidency. And what's more to the point about Donald Trump's pivoting, very interestingly, he has moved to remove language from abortion from the Republican platform and soften considerably other language on cultural issues. And I think that is very much within eye to the vital demographic of white suburban women. So Democrats are seriously up against it. And Lorcan may be right that it would be a mistake to cede the presidential race, but they are, Democrats are in defensive posture.
Yeah.
And at this stage, of course, allowing for the fact that things can change, they're really trying to save every House and Senate seat they can.
The Democrats years ago changed the whole system of selecting their candidate. Used to be done at the convention. And then I think it was under pressure from Black America that it changed so that the people themselves in the primaries decided who best would be the candidate. What would happen in a convention if Joe Biden was to do the Lyndon Baines Johnson thing and say, you know, my health or the health of the nation or whatever language he wanted to use determines that I should stand down?
It would be fascinating, Pat, because in modern American politics, it would be unprecedented. I could see it going one of two ways. The first would be the most expedient way, which would be to select Kamala Harris, given that she is the vice president. She is a woman of color. She would have access to the hundreds of millions that the Biden campaign has raised. The tricky part of that is if they were to go that direction, she is arguably the weakest in a general election against Donald Trump of the candidates who've been mentioned. She's tieable to the Trump, to the Biden administration and its perceived failings. She has ties to the Black Lives Matter movement. She can be tied to the immigration movement, which is going to be huge. So she has real vulnerabilities. On the other hand, Gretchen Whitmer of Michigan, Gavin Newsom of California are exciting candidates. In my view, if that went to the convention and delegates were motivated by electability above all, then I think Gretchen Whitmer is the clear choice because the road to the White House, given the polling data, the road to the White House runs through Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin. Whitmer is one of them. Newsom and Harris, as Californians, are definitively not.
All right, Lorcan.
Yeah, I would agree. I would agree on that. I think the way the Democrats should be looking at everything is what's going to give us energy and enthusiasm, and the split convention probably does do that. I don't see anybody within the Democratic Party being able to move around Kamala Harris, though. I don't think that they're going to be able to justify it. I don't think Newsom or Whitmer would be able to justify running against her because she's the vice president, and they won't be able to justify it.
Some of the comments coming in, not one word about Biden including a phrase about a bullseye on Trump. That's from Tony. And this was in some speech that Biden made. He used that phrase, and the Republicans are jumping on this. I've seen it online again and again and again, saying that effectively he was telling some misguided person out there to actually take a pot shot at Trump.
But
this is a man who said he would shoot someone on Fifth Avenue and get away with it.
Yeah, look, that's obviously not what Joe Biden was actually doing. It is now, I suppose, unfortunate terminology in hindsight because it can be used by this. And I think if you look at the Trump MVP picks, it's going to be interesting who he picks in the back in the after all of this, because J.D. Vance, who's one of the top most likely probably candidates, has directly made that argument saying this is down to Joe Biden. His rhetoric has led to this. It is linked to this. So some of his surrogates are directly making that argument as well as people online.
You've just called the US president doddery and dithering, 81-year-old. I'm 90 and have all my faculties. Shame on you. I'm talking about a particular individual. I have an aunt who's 105 who's got all her faculties, so come on. That's not what I meant, and you probably know that. Trump bravely stood up with his fist in the air. It was iconic. Another one, to say the language of the Democrats is responsible is ridiculous. Trump said things that, like, he could shoot someone and get away with it, and recently said there would be blood on the streets if he didn't win. So this is the level of political discourse, Larry, in the United States.
Yeah, and you see both sides, you know, viewing it through uniquely through their own prism. You know, on the one side, they only see the excesses of the right. The other side only sees the excesses of the left. And when you try to push back on that and say, look, there are problems here, from both directions, you immediately get harassed and angry comments from both of them. And I think that on mature, you know, if Americans are going to have a mature discussion about this, they will acknowledge that there are some excesses. I would say that Donald Trump has been significantly more extreme and volatile in his commentary. But there are problems on both sides. And I think that we need to ratchet down the rhetoric because now we see where it leads to.
As the conspiracy theories are alive and well, wake, wake, this people, this stinks to high heaven of a set of certain people aiding and abetting this attempted assassination. Couldn't see the dude on the roof. Give me a break, says one. Another one says, bias CNN said in multiple articles, Trump fell at an incident. No mention of the assassination attempt. That is nonsense. CNN, to the point of tedium, showed the incident again and again and again just after it happened. The same pictures again and again, Trump with his fist in the air, Trump being helped by the Secret Service. So that kind of thing, I don't know what CNN they were looking at. The one I was looking at, CNN International, as I say, to the point of tedium, showed it again and again.
But another likely VP pick, Marco Rubio, straight away afterwards lifted that exact same quote and started talking about the media talking about him falling. Obviously what had happened was they were covering this live, and so they're reacting to it live. Nobody knew exactly what had happened, and then as it unfolded within seconds, it was a loop of the image again and again and again. So that's all that is. But you see kind of really senior elected politicians are peddling the same stuff. So even if Trump is going to do the more unifying speak, the people underneath him are going to keep going for division, because division is what's going to win him an election.
It's extraordinary to you both, finally, that Trump, literally an inch away from losing his life, you know, it clipped his ear an inch to the right and he was a dead man.
Imagine the conversation we'd be having now, and it would have been, we were seeing it live. It would have been streamed live. I mean, it would have been a different world as we were getting up to watch that, if that had happened.
All right, well, we will be returning to this later on in the programme. Larry Donnelly, columnist with the Journal.ie, law lecturer at the University of Galway, and Lorcan Nyan, head of training at the Communications Clinic, and US columnist for the Sunday Independent. Thank you both very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.